Clayton Kershaw, welcome back, and welcome back to all of you listening to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast, CBSSports.com. It's Wednesday, May 27th. I'm Adam Azer with Chris Towers and Scott White. Greetings.
I love that. What's wrong with Clayton Kershaw?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It got so annoying. I saw articles from really people I know who are smart, like trusted baseball people who concocted these far-out arguments for maybe Clayton Kershaw isn't okay because I'm going to look at this thing that nobody ever looks at,
right?
And it's a little off, so... yeah, maybe he's really falling apart when obviously common sense would tell you he's still awesome. He's on pace for like 300 strikeouts. I mean,
well, people have to write about something, right?
So I guess
a lot of worries.
It's. I feel like it just makes everybody dumber by straining for something that isn't there.
Send us an email, a smart email, not a dumb email. Don't make us dumber. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. And put baseball podcast in the subject line. It is Wednesday, and that means we have to do probably a little bit of a shorter show today, maybe around 50 minutes or so. So not sure we'll get to emails, but we will try. Got a little Dude, Where's My Strikeout segment, an update on Johnny Cueto. The Dodgers made a trade. We'll see if we can do some grade the trade later on and maybe some DFS as well. Plenty to get to from yesterday's
game. From the Dodgers perspective, huh? Why was it the Dodgers who made a trade?
Because nobody cares about Juan Uribe, and the only people that are relevant here are Justin Turner and Alex Guerrero, who are helped by this, right?
Yeah. No, I was thinking about when... was it just yesterday we were talking about this, and you tried to convince me Justin Turner isn't any good?
No, I would... but, okay, that's a bit of a stretch. He's cooling off.
So yeah.
And he is cooling off, and most of the team is cooling off, except Alex Guerrero. He keeps getting extra base hits.
I do think, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion Justin Turner's going to have this killer slump that causes him to drop behind Alex Guerrero. But I do trust what Guerrero's doing more than I trust what Turner's doing. So now that Uribe's out of the picture, my enthusiasm for Guerrero is renewed. Yes.
Yeah. So the trade really quickly here, Atlanta traded Alberto Callaspo and pitchers Eric Stoltz, Ian Thomas, and Juan Jaime to the Dodgers for Juan Uribe and Chris Withrow, a pitcher. And Pedro Siriaco replaced Callaspo in the Atlanta lineup. Chris, is there anything else we need to know about this trade, fantasy-wise, maybe in deeper leagues?
I mean, the Dodgers always need pitching, but it's not like the guys that they got are any good.
Yeah.
I would expect... The most likely scenario to me seems to be that Turner and Guerrero would kind of start out in a platoon, because Turner's been historically better against righties, Guerrero's been really good against lefties. So I think we might see that.
Yeah, meanwhile, Yasiel Puig still has hamstring tightness when he runs, and Carl Crawford has not started baseball activities yet. He's recovering from an oblique strain. So, you know, you still have left field for Guerrero and third base for Turner or whatever they want to do for now, and we'll see how it plays out. Okay, Chris.
Yeah.
What's wrong, buddy? We hear it in your voice. You're a little under the weather, and we appreciate you being a trooper.
I have not been feeling great the last couple of days, but, you know, I'm fighting through it.
And you had to go to the dentist yesterday, right?
That was a great way to come back from the Memorial Day weekend. You come back, have an 8 a.m. dentist appointment on Tuesday when you're feeling sick. Woo! That's a lovely return to work.
Did they do any drilling?
Ah, yeah.
Yeah?
Had to get some fillings. It was great.
Yeah. Fillings.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of those, the worst part about it was the Novocaine shot. Because once they put the Novocaine in, you don't feel anything. But you got to get that shot in before. And it's,
yeah.
I need pre-Novocaine for the Novocaine.
Well, Novocaine's a pretty amazing thing.
It's pretty sweet. It. Yeah. Let me ask you guys this. We'll get off the subject here. How much do you trust your dentist when he or she tells you that you have cavities and need fillings?
My guy's good. My guy's, I trust him.
You believe him? He's not like a mechanic where you're like,
no,
okay, I guess it's broken.
He's like, my guy's like 70 years old and like spends half the year volunteering in the Israeli army. So I know he's not really like, he's not in it for the money at this point. He's doing it for the love of the game.
Okay.
Love of the teeth.
Okay.
I've never had a cavity, Adam. I've never received that.
Oh, humble brag.
Scott, if you had gone to my dentist, you'd have 16 cavities and they'd need fillings every year. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Sounds like you need to find a new dentist, Adam.
Well, I haven't gone to one since I moved to New York, so yes, you're 100% right. Back to baseball! Three walk-offs yesterday. It was actually a pretty cool day in baseball, but you know the guy who opposed Clayton Kershaw, Julio Teheran, he tricked me. He fooled me. I thought he was back. I thought he was okay. I started him, and he was terrible. 10 hits, 8 runs in 4 1/3, coming off a really good start against Milwaukee. What do you guys make of Julio Teheran?
I mean, what do I make of him? I don't know that there's anything to make of him right now. I think you just have to sit him. Obviously, you can't trade him. You just sit him and hope he turns things around, and you need to see more than the one-off start to get him back in your lineup, because he's had that a couple times. I still don't see anything underlying that like raises any red flags for me. Obviously, the home run rate's high, but that to me is just another way of explaining he's not pitching well.
Yeah, he's a fly ball pitcher. That'll happen. But his velocity's right. His pitch selection's pretty much the same. It's very strange.
Well, the announcers last night on ESPN were talking about his command.
Yeah.
And not necessarily control, although the walks are a little up this year, 22 walks in 55 innings, but command and not being able to throw his slider where he wants. And, you know, he just wasn't able to really put hitters away. He was a lot of foul balls and then eventually hits. It was ugly. So I guess we'll see with Teheran. Now, you said you can't trade him. That's true, but you could trade for Teheran. Do you consider him a buy low?
I guess I'd have to, but it's a situation where You're talking, the emphasis is on the low in buy low, because I don't really know what's going on with him. I don't know how easy it is to be corrected either, and I don't know when we're going to get to a point where you can trust him. I do think it's going to happen, but in the meantime, you may just have a bench spot blocked for a while.
All right, last thing here with Teheran. Danny Salazar or Teheran rest of season?
I'd go Salazar.
I think after this start, yeah, I need to adjust my rankings, move Teheran behind Salazar.
Lance Lynn or Teheran?
Yeah, I'll take Teheran there. Lynn's always just like a step behind ace level, and I don't see that changing. So rather than be confined to a mid-rotation guy in fantasy, I'll take the upside of Teheran.
I mean, Lynn's strikeout rate is way up.
Yeah, and he's always a good strikeout pitcher, but the whip is going to be in the 1-3 range, and there's going to be some inconsistencies in there.
Okay.
Kyle Seager, 2 home runs yesterday, and that included a grand slam. Seager is batting .300 with 4 homers against lefties, and he seems to be a guy who's getting better every year. Right now, Seager's slugging percentage is .497. That slugging percentage has gone up 4 straight years, including this year. But, of course, after hitting 4 home runs in his last 4 games, his slugging percentage is going to be pretty high. Anyway, do you guys think Kyle Seager could be reaching a new level, or are we just looking at a hot streak for a, you know, consistently good player?
If he was hitting lefties better and we could prove that it was a sustainable skill that he's added, I would be much higher on him. I like him. He's somebody that I always target at third base just because I think he goes later than he should.
Mm-hmm.
But he is hitting lefties better this season. I'm not sure how much of that is sustainable.
Well, and it's also strange, I guess not strange, but interesting that you put it that way, Adam, where after the 2-homer game, we're talking about, oh, could this be a career year for Seager? Prior to yesterday, the concern was, what's wrong with Kyle Seager?
Yeah, right.
You know? And it's kind of a strange thing, because I was just doing my rankings yesterday, and I do my rankings most days, but there's one day a week where I do a thorough, like, look through every player at every position and make sure it all looks good. And that was yesterday for me. And part of that is looking at the players' stats to date and how they ranked. And Kyle Seager was, I'm pretty sure he was outside the top 10, top 12 at third base, but I looked at the underlying numbers and it's like, eh, this guy's pretty much the same as he always is, so I trust him to come around. And now suddenly he's fourth at third base in points leagues. And you look at the breakdown of the position, there's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 guys in the 125 to 135 range, which speaks to the depth at third base, but it also tells me that Seager is probably one of the more trustworthy of that group just because of how consistent he's been.
Well, you actually called Seager a buy low candidate either last week or 2 weeks ago, Scott.
Yeah.
You cited the strikeout rate. He's not striking out.
Yeah, it's very low.
11 walks, 20 strikeouts so far for Seager. All right, so good player, Kyle Seager. Kyle Seager or Nolan Arenado, rest of the season?
Arenado.
Yep.
Seager or Machado?
Machado in points.
In points?
I think so.
I thought I might go the other way there just because of Machado's poor plate discipline. But he actually has more walks than Seager this year. That's new. He also has a lot more steals. That's something new he's doing. I'll take Machado, I think, in either format.
Okay. Moving on. Jesse Chavez, 62% owned. Is he under-owned, guys?
Maybe a little.
62% owned sounds like he's owned in every head-to-head format and some roto, and that sounds right to me.
All right, Fernando Rodney, 3 runs on 3 hits. Now, he should have gotten the save. He blew the save. He should have given up 2 runs, but Robinson Cano made a horrible error that extended the game. But even if he had given up 2 runs, still was a bad outing for Fernando Rodney. And do you think the writing is on the wall and he will eventually lose his job?
I think we talked about this last week.
Yeah.
And one of the concerns was that there might not be a...
Replacement?
A really good replacement waiting. Like, they just sent down Danny Farquhar, right?
Right, and Danny Farquhar would have been the obvious guy coming into the year.
Carson Smith!
Yeah, Carson Smith would be the one, I think, now.
Yeah.
But I don't know that the right... I mean, Lloyd McClendon's been backing Rodney pretty fiercely here.
And we see these kind of stretches from him in the past, and it's... Yeah. You know, I guess the question is whether it's a full season thing like what he did a couple years ago with the, I guess he had one bad year with the Angels in 2011. He's been pretty good since then. The underlying, the peripherals, the velocity, everything is pretty much the same as last season. He's just given up some home runs.
Mm-hmm. I would, in an AL only league, I'd handcuff Smith to Rodney for sure.
Yeah.
In a deep rotisserie league, if, yeah, I was hurting for saves, I might go ahead and pick up Smith. I've been stashing Tony Watson in our two roto leagues since Melanson was having all that trouble at the beginning of the year. So I wouldn't be opposed to doing that because in those formats, saves are hard to find. But I'm not counting on Smith taking over here soon.
Yeah, you mentioned, Chris, that Rodney looks a lot like, or that, you know, last year, things are similar as they were last year. But he had a 1.34 whip last year, and he's had a 1.33 or worse whip now 3 straight years, including this year. And I just think he was super lucky last season. You know, like, he should have blown a lot more saves. He should have. So, he gets a lot of opportunities, which is good. But, you know, people get comfortable with their closers. But right now, if you have Fernando Rodney and AJ Ramos or Sean Tolleson is out there, would you drop him for one of those guys?
I might do that. You're talking a head-to-head league with only two relief pitchers.
Or like
spots,
a 10-team league probably. Or something like that, yeah.
Yeah. And I might do that. I think Ramos has a lot of upside, actually.
Yeah. I'm not sure how many save opportunities he's going to get.
Yeah.
That would be the thing for Rodney. Yeah, that would be the deciding factor in his favor.
The Marlins are legitimately bad, and I'm having a hard time like catching up to that fact. And. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you. Three-fifths of their rotation goes down. That's what's going to happen.
I'm not having trouble.
Yeah.
I have accepted that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're bad.
Yeah.
Also, I read a scout's take, I believe, on Marcell Ozuna, said he was fat.
Yeah, Marcell's fine.
Okay.
He is not the problem with that team.
You know what I found with the was this an anonymous scout that some national writer was quoting?
I can't remember.
It was in a Miami Herald story.
It was in a Barry Jackson Miami Herald. Oh, you read it too, Chris.
Good. I feel like if a writer wants to make a point about something, he can find any anonymous scout to make that point for him.
There's a lot of scouts out there
that reacts to what's happening right now, and he's going to come up with some way, which isn't to diminish scouts. I think they're mostly great at what they do, but they'll
if you tell someone you're not on the record, they can say anything.
Yeah,
you know that. Anonymous sourcing stupid.
Well, anonymous sourcing may be stupid, but FanDuel is not stupid. FanDuel, in fact, is awesome. We play it every night. We have a live show at 6 p.m. Eastern dedicated to helping you set your lineup, so check that out. But get on FanDuel right now and use our offer code CBSPOD. New offer code for you. First 50 people that use CBSPOD on FanDuel.com and sign up, get a bonus of up to $200 that gets earned as you play. So CBSPOD. Look, here's the thing with FanDuel. You can start at just $1. There's no season-long commitment. There are no sign-up fees. You can play today. You can play tomorrow. You can play whenever you want. You're not feeling it today? All right, take the day off. Play this weekend, whatever it is. Daily games. Everything's exciting. You don't have to deal with your players being on the DL or anything like that. So get on FanDuel right now and give it a shot. I promise you will have fun. If you like fantasy, you will like playing on FanDuel. If we have some time today, we'll help you set your lineup. If we don't have time, you can watch Daily Fantasy Live at 6 p.m. Eastern. Moving on.
We do a daily DF Live tournament.
Oh, every day.
You can play against us.
Yeah, 100.
100 people, $2 entry. Top winner gets $75.
It rolls off the tongue for Chris. You got to find the words.
I'm just looking at it on my screen.
Okay. Have you played in that tournament yet, Adam?
I played once, yeah.
Yeah, I had 56 points last night, and I finished in 26th place. It's ridiculous.
It was a lot of points.
Very high scoring day, which is to be expected. It was a full slate and a lot of bad pitchers. So
Bumgarner was kind of a bust for FanDuel purposes.
Oh, yeah.
You got to get strikeouts, and he only got 3 of them. In fact, he's in Dude, Where's My Strikeouts coming up. All right, let's move a little bit quicker here. Tweet of the day number 1 is from Trevor Davis. Was hoping to hear some Ryan Braun talk on today's podcast. Wondering if he can keep this pace. Braun looks great.
He does look great, and I buy the storyline again with him because his production so closely follows it. Okay, so he had the thumb surgery in the offseason, seemed to correct the problem. Season starts, he's still terrible. He takes a couple days off to work on his swing because it seemed like he developed some bad habits compensating for that thumb injury. And then as soon as he gets back, he's Ryan Braun again. So I think he's back. I just moved him ahead of a couple guys in my rankings yesterday, Jacoby Ellsbury and Jose Bautista, who has the scary shoulder situation, even though it doesn't seem to affect him when he does play. I like Braun more than him, and I think he's back to being an elite outfielder.
Tweet of the day number 2 is from Danielle Shoemaker. She is the wife of Angels pitcher Matt Shoemaker, and she dropped some knowledge yesterday. I never would have thought this. She said, "Watching your husband pitch is a natural laxative." And then she put the smiling poo emoji.
I don't want to know what that's about.
Yeah, so
you know, he wasn't bad last night, so
no, but
I would have thought the other way.
If you're ever feeling a little backed up, maybe just watch some Matt Shoemaker highlights. Worked for Danielle.
I don't even know what that means. In what way is he a natural?
Look, don't question it.
Okay,
don't question it.
Sorry.
Yeah, let's let it be.
Let it simmer.
He was very good last night, Matt Shoemaker, and this is a guy who had a really nice season in 2014. And he seems to be alternating good and bad and good and bad, but the Padres cannot hit right now. But what do you think about Shoemaker? 7 scoreless innings, 4 hits, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts. 77% owned, by the way.
This is why I don't want to give up on Shoemaker. Al, last time he pitched, it was Al and I on together, and he made the comparison to Marco Estrada last year where, okay, great strikeout to walk ratio, but that home run rate was never good, and then it became a disaster for him last year, and maybe Shoemaker's falling into the same pattern, a guy who doesn't throw especially hard, but that combination of ratios just doesn't work in the long run with the lack of stuff. But at the same time, I think it's still too early in the season to just assume he's going to keep giving up home runs at this rate. It'll be at a high rate because that's what he does, but I think the excellent control and when he does keep the ball in the park, it leads to starts like this, and I just want to see more.
Matt Shoemaker or Taiwan Walker?
I will go with Shoemaker. Yep.
Matt Shoemaker or Carlos Rodon?
I'll stick with Rodon for now, but I'm another four or five wall game or two from dropping him down significantly.
Yeah, having taken a pretty deep look at Rodon last week, it's hard to be a left-handed pitcher with only two pitches in the majors. He has to develop that changeup. I think I might go Shoemaker.
Okay, Shoemaker or Hutchison?
Shoemaker.
Shoemaker.
How about that, Matt Shoemaker? Laxative of the
That's
day.
That's a laxative.
Yep. Tweet of the day number 3 from Joel Nichols. Today's pod rundown has to give Chris Towers a platform for his last 2 hours on Twitter.
I went on a rant yesterday.
What happened? I was wondering what happened here.
Somebody asked me... all I did was I went. There was some talk about Ryan Tannehill, the quarterback for the Miami Dolphins. He overthrew a pass in practice, and it's become a thing among the Miami Dolphins world where if he overthrows a pass, it becomes like it gets magnified and blown up. And so I just looked up his deep passing numbers on Pro Football Focus, and he's like a middle-of-the-road quarterback. So I tweeted that out, and someone was like, do you ever watch games, or do you just look at box scores?
Oh,
And I went on a rant, because it's like, if you find me the next person you find that only looks at box scores and never watches sports will be the first. You are tilting at windmills here, folks.
Tilting at windmills. I'm not sure I've heard that expression
before. It's a reference to the man of La Mancha,
okay.
Don Quixote.
Don Quixote.
It's when you're fighting a man, you know, remember when he's jousting with the windmills at the end of the story?
I actually do.
Yeah, it's a saying for when you're fighting imaginary enemies. It's a boogeyman.
A boogeyman. Oh, I would have gotten that one if you'd just gone straight to boogeyman. That's in my wheelhouse.
You've seen The Nightmare Before Christmas. You haven't read Don Quixote.
I haven't seen Nightmare Before. Oh, I've just heard of boogeyman.
I've never seen The Nightmare Before Christmas. Isn't that weird?
No, I haven't either. So
great movie.
We're on maybe I should, add that to the old queue. It's a great movie. If it gets Chris's stamp of approval, because we know which of the two of you liked Pitch Perfect 2 and which didn't. And even though I haven't seen Pitch Perfect 2, I'm predisposed to liking it.
Well, let's see
Pitch
what
Perfect 1.
But I like Pitch Perfect 1, so that's a ridiculous thing to say. So let's.
Well, I talked to Nate. Nate saw it. He said it was great.
Well, it got a 67% on Rotten Tomatoes, so fine. I will accept defeat in this one.
You know, it was Elizabeth Banks' directorial debut, so I think we need to cut her.
That's what I have to say about that. Let's move on. We got some news to get to. Johnny Cueto is going to miss at least one more start, but there is no structural damage in his elbow. Matt Adams is likely to go on the DL with a quad strain, which means Mark Reynolds will get more at-bats at first base for the Cardinals. Anthony Rendon could begin a rehab assignment Friday. Woo!
Finally.
Enrique Burgos is on the DL with shoulder tendonitis, and Miami has a new third base coach, Chris. Problem solved.
Everything's better now. Guys, we figured out what the issue was. It was the third base coach.
I'm sure. You know, the whole story about him not getting the signs right. I mean, do you trust who do you trust in this scenario? The GM with no coaching experience or the Brett Butler?
Let's just move on.
And the bench coach with no coaching experience too, right?
They're ridiculous.
And he's not the GM. He's the general manager.
I was hoping to inspire a rant like Chris had on Twitter yesterday. Just...
Well, Chris can't look up hand signals in the box score, and he never watches any games.
Third base coaches.
Not yet.
All right, deep leagues. Here we go, deep leagues. I'm just going to list some guys here, and you tell me if they should be owned in more leagues. They're owned in less than 20%. Mike Pelfrey, he's got a 2.77 ERA. Odrysson Berdespagne, Michael Lorenzen, Adam Warren, Chris Russen, Mitch Moreland, and Matt Duffy.
Okay, I missed the premise. We're
just
trying to
these
tell
guys
you.
Are owned in less than 20% of leagues. Do they strike you as guys who should be owned in more leagues?
That.
Pelfrey, Despagne, Lorenzen, Warren, Russen, Moreland, Duffy.
I got to be honest, no.
Yeah, maybe Duffy.
I think Duffy is under-owned at 6% because Casey McGee is gone now, and it looks like it's Duffy's job. And he could hit for a decent batting average, it seems like. But he's walked, like, six times all year.
Five times.
And doesn't have any power or speed, so that seems like NL-only material to me.
All right, I'll go out on a limb, and I like what Adam Warren's been doing lately. He is really becoming a better pitcher. And I don't know if he's going back to the bullpen when Tanaka comes back. It's very possible. But he is RP eligible and pitching a lot better lately. So just keep an eye on him. He's 12% owned, Adam Warren, for deeper leagues. And next category is, well, it's about time. We got some production from guys who haven't been producing. Jose Abreu, 1-for-5 with a home run, 4 RBI, but 3 strikeouts at Toronto. Last 25 games before this for Abreu, he hit .250 with 2 home runs, 6 walks, and 24 strikeouts. So, it's about time, Jose Abreu. Any concerns about him, or, you know, is he about to come out of it?
I mean, he's a weird case because I want to be pretty conservative with guys who don't have a long track record. And he's a guy who only has one season of a major league track record. So his last 25 games represent, what, 15% of his total track record in the major leagues. So I'm not concerned, but I could see somebody being concerned. I just don't think it's the right way to go. I think he's very good.
Matt Kemp, 2-for-5 with a double, run scored, 3 RBI, and a strikeout at the Angels. In May, Matt Kemp is batting .185 with a .224 on base and a .217 slugging percentage. He has been terrible, and Kemp has 1 home run so far this year. Matt Kemp, it's about time, buddy.
I'm just not sure he's quite right physically, because it seemed like he'd gotten back on track last year when I was writing him off coming into the season because of all the injuries. I just didn't think he was going to be the same player anymore. And maybe we're seeing that now. It was just delayed. He has complained about playing through something, right?
Ankle, right? Yeah.
And yeah, he's... So it sounds like it's even documented he's playing hurt. The lack of power is startling to me.
Yeah, I'd like to take a look at him, and I'm going to do so today to see if there's anything underlying it. Because it's really just the lack of power is unbelievable so far.
Neil Walker, speaking of lack of power. Mm-hmm. So he had his 3rd home run yesterday. He's been kind of a dud this year, .259 with 3 home runs. Last year, Walker hit 23 home runs in 137 games. Now, last year, Walker had a home run. His home run to fly ball ratio was career high, 10.1%. This year, it's a career low, 4.4%. And I think it's usually right in the middle, 7.5-ish or so, if I remember correctly. So what does that mean anything to you guys with Walker, as he only has 3 home runs right now?
I think he's come back down to earth a little this year. Last year is probably going to go down in his career season. The 23 home runs, it tied for the most among second basemen, and it was 7 more than his previous career high. And prior to last year, we thought of him as more this top 15-ish second baseman, not a top 10 guy, and I think that's how I'm approaching him now. He's going to hit more home runs than he's on pace for currently, but he's not going to be a 20 homer guy again, I don't think.
Yeah, I think he settles in 16 to 18 again.
Yeah, let's say there was like a Steve Pierce out there that at least has more upside. Would you consider dropping Walker for Pierce? Because Walker is owned in 89% of leagues, and I just don't know. That means he's owned in most 10 team leagues, and I just don't know that he's worth it.
I think if Walker was my starting second baseman, I couldn't swap him out for Pierce.
Yeah.
Because I still don't trust the Pierce playing time.
Walker has an everyday job.
Right.
And Pierce doesn't?
It's not clear he does, no. I actually don't know how close Jonathan Scope is to coming back.
Man, that's a good point.
But I feel like it's gonna happen sooner or later. I'll check on that, because I haven't heard much in a while.
And this one's a bit of a reach in the well, it's about time category, but at this point we'll take anything from David Ortiz. He doubled yesterday, hooray, at the Twins. His previous 6 games, Ortiz was 2-for-23. But I don't know, it might be a real issue here with Ortiz. .222, 6 home runs, 18 RBI. He's 64 years old. He's batting .105 against lefties and 57 at bats this year. How concerned are we about Ortiz?
At his age, you have to be. you'd have to be concerned about any player, but I'm less concerned about him than I would be of any other 39-year-old. I think he's had slow 2-month stretches in the past few years, and then he's looked like David Ortiz all of a sudden again. So I'm not that concerned, no.
I think the lefty splits is what really concerns me with him, because remember back 5-6 years ago, it looked like he was falling off then.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you know, guy who's with an unathletic build, he's dropping off in his early 30s. This is always what happens. But then suddenly he figured out how to hit lefties, and it bought him several more years of
yeah.
elite production. Now he's not hitting lefties again. And a lot of times with aging players, you see the platoon splits become more dramatic. So it doesn't mean he's not going to be a startable player across the board, but he's probably going to have a suspect batting average, and the other numbers will be pretty good.
All my years playing fantasy baseball, I don't know if I, which is really not that many years. It's like 5 years now. But I play, you know, 5 to 7 leagues a year, it seems. I don't think I've ever owned David Ortiz. I can't get over the DH only thing. I think it just hamstrings you so much. He has to have a great year to justify where he gets drafted.
Yeah, I mean, I have him for the first time in one of my roto leagues. He's DH only, and it's not great right now.
I mean, this is kind of obvious for some people, but if you've never drafted David Ortiz, maybe it's not. It just takes away your ability to put someone else in that DH spot. It's not just that Ortiz has to be there. It's that you oftentimes have to bench someone because you can't find a way to get him in your lineup, and you can't just throw him in as a DH. But, you know.
He's a guy who tends to slip a lot, too, though, because of the DH thing. So there have been scenarios where I drafted him because of that and haven't been disappointed. But if that happened this year, I'd be disappointed so far.
With interleague play, it's feasible that he'll gain first base eligibility at some point. I looked at the schedule before the season started, and I don't think it would be until August.
Yeah.
I can double check.
That sounds right.
Okay. Next category. Dude, where's my strikeouts? Three pitchers who...
Dude, where's my Ks?
Dude, where's...
That's the way to go. Come on.
Okay. Yeah, that's better. I agree.
Dude, where's my Ks? Jordan Zimmermann, Madison Bumgarner, and David Price right now are not striking out guys like we're used to seeing. Any concerns about these three guys? And I will preface it by saying that I really don't love what I'm seeing from Jordan Zimmermann, despite the fact that his ERA is like around 2 in his last 5 starts.
Well, I think maybe the takeaway from here is that last season was the big outlier for Jordan Zimmermann, because
his
strikeout rate.
Agreed, Chris. Sorry to interrupt you, but we are like, okay, I've pretty much given up hope of Zimmermann striking out guys like he did last year, and that's fine. Going into the season, I was fine with that. If he regressed to his previous numbers, he still could be a very, very good fantasy pitcher. But he's got a career low strikeout rate right now and 7% swinging strike rate. And he's got one game this year with more than 8 swinging strikes. And unless there were more yesterday, the game log hadn't updated on Baseball Reference. I don't know that there were. So, I'm a little concerned about all the contact he's giving up.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But, you know, he's down to a 7.3 swinging strike rate, which isn't, it's a big drop off from last season, but his previous career rate was right around 8. You know, 8.5. So that drop off isn't, it's not so concerning once you take out last season. If last season was the outlier, then I think it becomes less of a concern. You look at his FIP, it's right where it was before last season. So I think, you know, you're looking at him as a mid-3s ERA guy.
Okay. How about Bumgarner and Price?
Those two I'm not really that concerned about myself. Price in particular, this last start Tuesday, which was a great start, he had only 3, but he had 21 strikeouts in his previous 2 starts, so it seems like the highs are still really high, and I think over the course of a full season, he'll be back to a strikeout per inning.
Yep, and it should be noted that Price, he has struggled with strikeouts in 3 of his recent starts. 2 of them are against Kansas City, and then last night at Oakland, and those two teams rank in the bottom 6 in baseball in strikeouts, so probably just a matchups thing, and he struck out 271 guys last year. It's incredible.
He's
may
good.
Not do that again.
Yeah, maybe not. Lineup stuff. Leonis Martin led off and played center field for Texas, and he went 0-for-4 with a walk and a run and a strikeout. But Delino DeShields did sit.
Yeah, just play Delino DeShields at this point.
Delino DeShields, not only is he going to be better than Leonis Martin, but I think if he plays, he'll be better than Josh Hamilton. Agree or disagree?
Yeah.
I'll say neither. I don't necessarily agree or disagree. It's certainly possible.
Okay.
Way to straddle the fence there.
I'm a fence straddler.
Yeah.
Rajay, I'm just fighting with windmills or whatever. Rajay Davis.
Tilting at windmills. It's so much more poetic that way.
I guess that's the part of the expression I don't understand, the tilting.
It's probably an old English thing, I'm sure.
So, like...
I've heard
of tilt as a noun, like, for a matchup.
A three-game tilt.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's probably you're fighting
with.
That's
what it means, you're just making
it. It just sounds so... It's tilting at windmills.
Okay.
It makes you sound so learned. And I'm all about creating an inauthentic air of intellectualism.
This is a house of learned doctors.
Exactly.
Rajay Davis batted second and DH'd. While Victor Martinez is out, you know, Davis is 28% owned. I think he might be worth adding in Roto Leagues. He is an elite base stealer. Wasn't last night.
He got stolen bases.
Got caught, but something to keep in mind. I think the playing time is going to go up regardless of lefty-righty for Davis. George Springer batted leadoff. Preston Tucker batted third. Tucker went 0-for-3 with a walk and two strikeouts. Steven Vogt played first base for the second time this season. Do you think maybe that could happen more with Ike Davis on the DL?
Sure. I think the A's would be wise to find any way possible to keep Vogt in the lineup. And he's played first and outfield before, so seems highly possible.
And a little frustrating if you're a Michael Taylor owner. Tyler Moore started in left field for the Nationals. He went 1-for-2 with a walk at the Cubs. All right, three up. Hey, Mark Teixeira, top 9 first baseman, 9th in Roto, 6th in points. He's walking a ton. He homered and doubled. He drove in 4 yesterday. He's really having a great year, and he's only batting .243. So
with like a .190 BABIP, it's hilarious.
Well, he's got more homers than singles. 14 homers, 13 singles.
Exactly. It's such a He's the weirdest player this year, and usually you'd look at a 191 BABIP and be like, oh, okay, he's having bad luck. He's going to regress to the mean. But exactly. I mean, so many of those hits are home runs that...
It's a Jose Bautista thing. Jose Bautista always consistently has low BABIPs. He's always in the 240, 250 range, and you would say, well, the league average is 290, 300. He could even hit better. But no, it's guys that hit a lot of fly balls and guys that hit a lot of home runs are naturally going to have a lower BABIP just because those balls aren't counted as balls in play. They're counted as hits, but not balls in play. So,
which to me kind of undermines the whole utility of BABIP, but that's a different discussion.
Look,
for a different
you just
day.
Have to understand the context within which the players are
operating. I feel like BABIP was started to like explain away batting average, but then we see so many cases where the league average doesn't apply for a player that we end up explaining away BABIP. So it's like, why did we even go to it in the first place?
I gotta say, I'm sorry, Scott. I'm quite surprised by this stat as I'm nerding out here. Mark Teixeira is 118th in average fly ball distance.
Go.
That's weird. But right above him is Edwin Encarnacion, George Springer, Jose Bautista. They're all between 113 and 118.
And that's another thing that you'll see a lot of extreme fly ball pitcher or hitters will have that kind of split just because they're hitting a lot of infield flies as well.
Oh, okay. So that's interesting.
That is interesting.
You want to guess who's number one average fly ball distance this year at 326 feet?
Who's that? Giancarlo Stanton.
He's on the Braves.
Freddie Freeman?
And it's someone you wouldn't expect.
Is he still on the Braves?
Kind of. he will not be playing for the Braves tonight.
Kelly Johnson?
Correct.
Yeah.
He's on the DL, but yes, he's still on the Braves.
If I could finish the thought on
Teixeira. I'm sorry, Scott. Yeah, let's talk about Teixeira.
He's on like a 50-homer pace, right? Does anyone honestly believe he's going to hit 50 home runs?
No, and he has a career-high slugging percentage. But could he hit 240 with 30 home runs? Which would,
I mean, maybe, but he's halfway to those home runs right now. So do you really want to... I guess he's as clear of a sell-high guy as anyone to me, because his value is all in the home runs, and I guess the walks, but no singles is going to counteract that. So when the home run rate slows down, as it inevitably will, there's going to be some rough weeks ahead.
Why can't he hit 40?
He can.
He can.
It seems unlikely. It's unlikely.
He's a long part of the way there. But you're still 26 home runs in 110 games, and that's assuming health. He only hit 24 in 123 games last year. So he'd have to be not just better than he was last season, but pretty significantly better.
But I'll say this about Teixeira, and this has been mentioned. He's further removed from his wrist injury, which really hurt him, and now he's healthy. And that, you know what, if I think there's one thing that's going to regress with him, it's health. I think he probably will get hurt. And I totally agree that he's a sell-high candidate. My issue in the league I own him is, like, I haven't put him on the market. I just don't think anybody's going to take him, you know?
I think that's the biggest
thing.
It's going
to be tough to sell Teixeira, so I might kind of be stuck with him. And, you know, I still think it's possible he could be, like, a top 15 first baseman this point going forward. Like, is that crazy?
From this point forward?
Yeah, like, let's see who's
15. I bet against it from this point forward. For end of season, I think there's a very good chance.
Would you rather have Chris Carter or Mark Teixeira?
I'd rather have Teixeira, but that's been the case for a while now. I think they're very similar players, to be honest.
Okay. Yasmani Tomas, 77% owned. Two doubles last night. 2 for 5, 3 RBI. And he's batting .349. Last 28 days, he's batting .360 with only one home run. That makes him the 23rd best third baseman in points, but 13th in Roto with that batting average. I don't know, Scott, you've kind of talked about Yasmani Tomas, and you're not buying it because he's not hitting for any power. Still feel the same way, 77% owned.
I do.
You do? Yeah, I pretty much do, too. I do think it's worth pointing out, 7 doubles this season, 5 have come in his last 5 games, so maybe we'll start to see a little more power. But right now, his value's entirely dependent on his batting average, and that's something I'm not inclined to trust.
And Addison Russell was 80% owned last 28 days, which is basically when he's been up. Number 12 shortstop in points, number 9 in Roto. Russell went 3 for 4 with 2 doubles and an RBI, the game-winning RBI against the Nationals, and he's batting .252 with 8 walks and 44 strikeouts. But 11 doubles for Russell in 31 games.
A lot of strikeouts. I think he can be a top 12 shortstop, but that's... the position's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's just
awful.
If
he wasn't shortstop eligible, he might be like 40% owned now.
Yeah.
Yep, but it's hard to get rid of him. And he's second base eligible as well, obviously, which might help. Nobody down today. We talked about, let's go to the rotation. We talked Teron, we talked Kershaw. What do you make of Danny Salazar and his .365 ERA?
I think it's kind of inflated. There were some really good starts in there where he gave up 4 earned runs. So I don't hold that against him.
Yeah, and last night Salazar was cruising along until he ran into a bit of a jam and Prince Fielder hit a 3-run homer off him. And he's a 1.14 whip and a ton of strikeouts. And how about Clay Buchholz? Last 3 starts for Buchholz, including last night at Minnesota. 5 earned runs in 22 and a third with 3 walks and 19 strikeouts, and he's 84% owned.
It's weird. I'm having trouble processing it. He's such a tough player to pin down in so many ways. But worth owning, for sure. I think I added him in a 12-team Roto League a couple weeks ago, and he's definitely worth owning. The upside's there. He's just, it's so hard to figure out what he's going to do in his next start.
Yeah.
He loves the new pitching coach, Carl Willis. Is that his name?
Sure.
Carl Weathers.
Do you know anything about him?
He was in the Indian system.
I know that they made a change, but beyond that, I haven't heard much.
No, I just know that the timing is of such that it's, you know, pretty much coincided with this really good streak of Clay Buchholz and most of the pitchers for the Red Sox, except for Joe Kelly.
coincided is the key word there.
He thinks it's a coincidence.
Yes.
I follow.
That is the root word of coincidence. Yeah.
It's pretty hard to believe a guy comes in and all of a sudden Clay Buchholz is different. Let's talk Fringy starting pitchers now. Just give me your top three from this kind of, well, not that bad. Average group. Matt Shoemaker, Archie Bradley, Jay Happ, Jesse Chavez, Chris Tillman, Kyle Hendricks, Jaime Garcia, Alex Colome.
Shoemaker, Bradley.
Really? Still Bradley?
What are we doing? Ranking them?
Yeah, top three.
Tillman?
That sounded like a lot of conviction there.
You said Shoemaker, Bradley, Tillman.
Yeah.
Boy, Bradley's really been terrible.
He has been terrible.
Yeah, and I had a lot of concerns about his control coming into the season, which he hasn't. He hasn't allayed any of those concerns. I think the upside with the rest of these guys is so limited. I guess maybe Chavez over Bradley.
I don't know. I mean, I guess Bradley does have the highest upside, but he's not even showing any hints of it right now. And if he got sent down to the minors today, it wouldn't surprise me. Shoemaker's the clear number one, I think. Chavez would be in points leagues, but, you know, like trying to take the relief pitcher eligibility out of the equation.
Yeah, who do you think is going to be the best pitcher?
No love for Kyle Hendricks so far.
I was looking at him at third, yeah.
Okay. And I think Chris Tillman could get hot.
Yeah, he could.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at him and last week, I think, in his two start, or he's pitched against the Blue Jays three times this season. He's given up like 14 runs in those three starts, and he's been like a sub-3 ERA in his other five or six starts.
Yep, I was going to mention that. And in the bullpen, David Robertson gave up a home run and blew it at Toronto. Really tough loss for the White Sox. Can't buy a win, but I'm assuming...
For a while there, Robertson was making the Yankees almost look bad for picking Miller and Betances above him, because he looked just as good as those two guys.
Yeah, but they...
But now the ERA is ugly.
No, I mean, 241, but... Miller, they like one less year and I think 10 million fewer or something like that.
It was something that I had noticed every time I looked at like the bullpen leaderboards on Fangraphs. It was always like some combination of Betances, Robertson, and Miller as the leaders.
I gotta look up Betances' streak here of, I think it's like 35 batters in a row without allowing a hit.
That's pretty good.
It's incredible. So nobody's worried about David Robertson, right?
No way.
Okay. Injuries, news, and notes. Deonna Navarro began a rehab assignment. Avisal Garcia likely to miss the next two games. He's got this knee thing going on. Alfredo Simon is on the bereavement list. He will miss his next start. Michael Morse is on the DL with a sprained ligament in his finger. Justin Bour, anyone?
NL only. He can hit. Fat dude Drake.
It's kind of a bore.
That's his, he has a t-shirt. It says Fat Dude Drake. I'm all on with him.
In NL only leagues.
So in like 12%
as a Marlins fan.
In like 8% of leagues.
Henderson Alvarez, no structural damage in his shoulder. Carlos Santana, x-rays were negative on his wrist. He was hit by a pitch. Danny Salazar left with a finger issue. May have been a cut or a blister. Will Myers is improving. Could be 7 to 10 days away from coming back. And Carlos Rodon will pitch Friday.
Show us something, Carlos.
We're not going to have time for DFS talk today.
So you'll
have to watch the show. We only have 5 minutes left. I want to do Grade the Trade.
Okay.
But I wanted Daily Fantasy Live, 6 p.m. Eastern.
It's better than what we do here anyway.
I've been doing a different thing on FanDuel the last few days. I've been playing head-to-head for $1 with my buddy, Jay Darren Darst, who you guys work with in the Fort Lauderdale office.
Yeah.
And we compete, and the winner gets 80 cents. And he has just been kicking my butt. So he IM'd me just now. He said, I will create a game on FanDuel, or do you just want to give me 80 cents? So it's fun. It's good. You can play against your friends. It's kind of cool. You can trash talk a little bit. But I'm going to play Darce today and hopefully get 80 cents back. Now let's do some Grade the Trade. Here's the deal with Grade the Trade today. I ran out of time. It was a busy show today, a lot of stuff from the game. So I ran out of time. Didn't have time to put them in the notes. So I'm going to go through my email and read them.
Oh, goodness.
And this could be tough.
You haven't even scanned them at all
nope.
at a time?
First look.
Last 5 minutes. By the seat of our pants.
Five more minutes for Grade the Trade. Here we go. From David in New York City. Grade the Trade. 12-team mixed roto league. 30-man rosters. All closers are owned. I give Pedro Alvarez and Cody Allen, and I get Carlos Santana, and he still has Grilly, Hector Rondon, and Tolleson.
Categories?
Yeah, it's a roto league. He still has three closers. He gives up Pedro Alvarez and Cody Allen for Carlos Santana. I love it.
I'm surprised I don't like it more than I do with all the contextual information, the scarcity of closers, the fact that Santana, his main strength, well, not his main strength, but one of his biggest strengths is walks, and those don't mean anything in roto. I'll give it a B.
Yeah, I was thinking B.
Next email is from Scott. Good morning, Susan, Sally, and Anne. No actual reference in this one. I just thought I'd give you all girls' names since you spent more time on Friday's pre-recorded podcast discussing Pitch Perfect 2 than you did fantasy baseball.
Whoa, there's nothing. Pitch Perfect 2 is not a gender. It's a gender-neutral tale.
Completely agree. Here's the trade, though. I sold high on Steven Vogt. Okay, so he gave up Vogt, Robinson Cano, and A.J. Ramos. He got Matt Holliday, Jock Peterson, and Houston Street. Give up Vogt, Cano, and Ramos. Get Matt Holliday, Jock Peterson, and Houston Street.
I think that's like a C.
Yeah, I'm inclined to say that's even because
I think Street's safer than Ramos, but Ramos has more upside.
And I don't feel like it was that much of a sell high on Vogt.
No.
I think Vogt's going to be one of the best catchers in fantasy. Just not the best.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out whether I should sell high on him because I've got him and Zunino and I've got LaCroix coming back. I'm trying to figure out what to do.
In a two-catcher league?
Two-catcher league.
And I think Zunino is scrap metal, so I'd probably just sit tight.
Well, go to the Fantasy Baseball Today blog. Yeah. I wrote a blog post about it. Leave it in the comments. Tell me what I should do.
All right.
Two or three more here real quick. This is from Tim in Flushing, New York. Give up Hayward, Lester, and Familia for Clayton Kershaw. Give up Hayward, Lester, and Familia for Kershaw, and he can still pick up A.J. Ramos or Cody Allen, and he's going to pick up Rusney Castillo.
Boom!
That's a great trade.
A.
That is an A. Next up is Kyle in Korea. Grade the trade. Get Carlos Carrasco. Give Lorenzo Cain. Should be Cain, I think. Give up Lorenzo Cain for Carlos Carrasco.
I like that a lot.
Oh, yeah.
A.
That's an A as well, yeah.
This is the last one. It is Jason, J in the Bay. And he says, Dear Gumshoe, Inspector, and Super Sleuth.
There you go.
All righty.
Grade the trade. Now, here this is a tough one, guys. 12-team 5x5 Roto Dynasty Auction.
Oh, goodness.
Give up a $31 Tulowitzki.
Good grief.
And a $13 Ryan Zimmerman.
I can't remember these numbers.
Relax, we're almost done. Give up a $31 Tulowitzki and a Ryan Zimmerman $13, which is $44, for a $40 Miguel Cabrera.
So pretty much Zimmerman for Tulo.
No, Zimmerman and Tulo for Miggy.
Zimmerman and Tulo for... Like I said, I'm sick.
Dynasty League. All right.
Zimmerman and Tulo, both for very keepable prices. I mean, Tulo's a high price, but for who he is, for Miguel Cabrera, who's borderline at 40, I don't think I like it. I think I'm going to give that a C-.
That's interesting.
I'll give it a B.
Is Ryan Zimmerman going to be worth $13 as a first base only player next year?
I think so. He's, for not having a very high batting average, he's pretty high in the rankings right now. And I expect that batting average to improve.
I think I would do it.
Yeah, I think I like
it. Cabrera.
I think I would, yeah. I think Tulo and Zimmerman are going to be on the DL by next week, so. And by the way, that Carlos Santana trade that we graded earlier, you should just make sure he's okay, I think, before pulling the trigger, because that looked really bad. I was shocked that he stayed in the game. He probably only stayed in the game to run. Well, I guess I shouldn't say that, but it's possible he only stayed in the game. Well, then again, they would have pinch run for him. It's not like he's fast. But, yeah, it was in the ninth inning. He got really hit hard. I thought, oh, boy, this could be a big injury. So just check on that.
Man, it's a hot one.
We're done for the day. Daily Fantasy Live, 6 p.m. Eastern. I'm Adam Mason for Chris Towers and Scott White. Scott and Chris, goodbye.
See ya.
See ya.
Listeners, goodbye. Nerds out.